Welcome to the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast, a product of the Health Policy Research Consortium, a CTIS program, your weekly podcast empowering communities to use policy as a vehicle to improve their health and learn how to mobilize your community to create positive change where you live, work, and worship. Wait not a minute more. It's time to get started with the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast.
Welcome to the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast. I'm your host, Patricia Terrell, and joining me is Mr. Benjamin Turner, the Director of Coverage and Connections at the Primary Care Coalition, which is a nonprofit organization that is committed to ensuring access to care and health equity for under-resourced members of our community. And today's topic will be about the failed repeal of the Affordable Care Act. We're going to talk about the policy implications for minority communities. Mr. Benjamin Turner, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, we're very excited to have you. Lots going on with the ACA right now. So let's get some background, if we can, about the ACA. What are the basics? Tell me, what problems did the ACA seek to solve?
Sure. So the basic goals of the ACA, or Obamacare, were first to increase health insurance coverage, to get more people into a health care plan that would cover their health care costs. Second was to make sure that those plans were high quality, that they actually covered what you needed, that they didn't have a cutoff at any point, that they didn't leave you stranded even though you were paying for the insurance. And then third was a longer term goal of reducing unnecessary healthcare spending, really getting people into preventive care and making sure that people don't drop through the cracks of the healthcare system.
And when you look at some of the obstacles, there were several. Can you tell us about the obstacles that came into play when it came to the enactment and implementation of the ACA?
Absolutely. So the first biggest obstacle for the ACA was that one of the big ways it expanded coverage was increasing access to Medicaid, especially for low-income adults. And the Supreme Court ruled shortly after it became law that the way it was drafted, that the Medicaid expansion would be optional. So states could choose whether or not to accept all of that federal money to allow low-income people in their state to sign up for health coverage. About half of the states chose not to accept the federal funding and to leave lots and lots of their residents uninsured.
Why was that decision made?
So there was a lot of discussion about whether or not that federal commitment would eventually go away, leaving states on the line. So the way that the law was drafted, it would guarantee close to 100% of all of those extra funds would be covered by the federal government through 2019, and then it will gradually decline to between 80 and 90%. But there was some concern among some states that would not hold true.
It was a budgetary issue.
That was their reasoning for kind of rejecting what was a very much more generous than any other kind of coverage program from the federal government. So about half of the states chose not to adopt. Since then, that's actually improved some. Several states have gradually joined on that it really was just too irresistible to turn down that much money. So states like Louisiana, Alaska, Montana, and Indiana have all joined on. There's still 19 states that have not expanded, including locally Virginia is a big state that has not expanded. So low-income people really are cut out. Unless they have some other way of getting coverage, they can't get...
And why do you think Virginia chose not to?
So there's still a lot of push and pull between the governor and the state legislature trying to get that law passed. So that's something that's been going back and forth for a while. Another of the big challenges was that the initial rollout of the Affordable Care Act, if everyone remembers, it feels like such a long time ago. But back when it was implemented in the fall of 2013, it was very chaotic. The website didn't quite work right. It was it's a very confusing system, and not everything worked perfectly. A lot of people were very confused by it. Since then, there's been ongoing improvements. Every state runs, or not every state, but many states run their own marketplace. Many others rely on the federal marketplace. All of those websites have been improving over time, and the systems have been improving. There's still lots of bugs to work out, but they've been getting better. And then third, and related to this, is that there's, as we push more and more people into these plans, one of the things you've learned is that there are big gaps in health insurance literacy, that it's a complicated system to understand. Most of us don't spend too much time thinking about it until we need to.
And what type of gaps are you talking about?
So understanding premiums, deductibles, co-insurance, co-pay.
Learning the lingo.
Learning the lingo and learning how to make those kinds of decisions. So there's a lot of just vocabulary that is kind of exhausting to learn. But then when it's linked to your own health, it's really hard to make those decisions, especially when you're pressured with real healthcare, sometimes life and death decisions.
So there are literacy issues surrounding that too.
And so there's been a lot of commitments. So literacy and language proficiency have been big barriers for that. And so that's one of those areas where there's been a lot of progress on this, where there's been a commitment to increasing the resources that are available and to providing education to people. And one of those is destinationhealth.me. So that's a project that we at the Primary Care Coalition work on. We have tools and education available in English, Spanish, French, Amharic, Chinese, Korean, and Vietnamese. And so we're working to continue to provide that kind of health insurance literacy and how to use your health coverage and how to use your doctor.
Any more obstacles?
So overall, despite those big obstacles...
That's enough, right?
Yeah. So there are still some unstable markets, and this gets a lot of attention in the press, where prices of the premiums go up and down. They go up. I think most recently, there's been a lot of big increases recently, and some counties where there are no insurance options available in the private market. So just recently, we had it nationally, there were every county had at least one plan, but earlier this week, several counties in Virginia lost their only plan.
So you're saying that there are people who are not covered because the state where they reside does not...
So they're at risk that in 2018, they'll go to the marketplace and won't be able, there will be no options to buy a plan. And so right now, that's something that the leadership in Virginia are working really hard to find some carrier, some insurance company that's willing to sell on the market.
Wow.
And they're confident that they'll find somebody.
Well, we sure hope so. That would leave a lot of people very vulnerable.
And that really affects rural areas the most.
I can imagine.
Areas with low populations that are rural are hard for insurance companies to sell plans.
So how did they overcome these obstacles?
So it's been a lot of work. So I think I mentioned that there's been a lot of just constant work over the last 4 or 5 years to improve the systems, build new tools and resources. And overall, the success, I think that just this week they've released new census numbers for 2016, that the uninsured population nationally is declined from more than 41 million in 2013 to just 27.5 million.
Wow. And as we're talking now about the impact that it had, even though it had a very chaotic start, there have been some positive impacts as you're just now reporting.
Absolutely. So the uninsured population has increased about as projected. And there are millions of other people who are benefiting by getting more comprehensive coverage, not having to stay at a job they hate. They can choose to buy coverage even if they have a pre-existing condition. So all of the rules that are popular in the Affordable Care Act, even though maybe you had insurance before and you have insurance now, but you could have benefited a lot and not even be caught up in those stats.
And so what can you tell us about the ethnic and racial impact of the ACA?
So before the ACA was passed, there were really big disparities in insurance coverage based on your race. Latinos and African Americans were much more likely than white Caucasian people to be uninsured. So those groups made the biggest gains. So Latinos dropped from an average of 25% uninsured rate to just below 17%, which is just an enormous improvement. And African Americans from 17.5% down to almost 11.5%. So again, really impressive improvements. They're still more likely to be uninsured than white Americans. So those disparities persist. And a lot of that is because a lot of people don't know about that the Affordable Care Act is still in place. They don't know about the marketplace.
And so who are these people who do not know about this?
So it's interesting. So it feels like everyone should know about it because we've been talking about it. I feel like I've been talking about
I'm sure.
it for the last 5 years. But even among some of my friends, I talked to them, especially since the election, and they think that the Affordable Care Act, that Obamacare is gone, that it doesn't exist anymore. It's still in place. All of the benefits are still there. The individual mandate penalty if you don't have health insurance is still there. Everything is still there. And I think that's one of those ongoing work that needs to be done is to make sure that we're reaching people who haven't been reached yet and letting them know that those benefits are available and that and people can take advantage of them to get health insurance.
So let's talk about how the ACA has impacted the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. Do you have any stats for us?
Yeah, I have a couple of quick stats. So again, these are from the just recently released census data. So Maryland was already doing pretty well with the uninsured, a little bit better than the federal rate, was at 10% before the ACA, is now down to just about 6%. Virginia was at 12.3% and is down to 8.7. And if the assumption is that they were willing to expand Medicaid, that could get much closer to that rate that Maryland has. And D.C. was it really commits a lot of their local dollars to health programs, has dropped from 6.7% all the way down to 3.9%. So they're getting close to universal coverage in D.C.
You know, this is amazing. I mean, you're reporting some excellent statistics. So why the attempts to repeal ACA?
So there were some policy and political reasons for the repeal. First off, that people didn't like the premium increases that went up every year, and people did not like how high some of the deductibles in the plans were. And so it's hard to unlink those. So deductibles is how much you have to pay out of pocket before the health insurance plan kicks in, whereas premiums is your monthly payment. And if you bring one down, if you bring that deductible down, usually you have to pay more in the premium. And so the new administration and the new Congress promised to bring in replacements that would stabilize the market so you wouldn't have that kind of bouncing up and down and reduce premiums, letting more people buy cheaper plans. And they were hoping to get more younger people by offering cheaper plans and plans that maybe even had higher deductibles. They could get more young, healthy people in, which would make it then cheaper for them to offer plans to older people or sicker people that need health care.
But that did not happen, I take it.
So none of their plans, the repeal and replace plans, passed. So they have a couple of common themes on what they did. So first, that they would weaken the regulations on insurance companies. The insurance companies under the Affordable Care Act had to offer coverage regardless of your pre-existing conditions and had to offer basic minimum quality of coverage, that they had to cover certain things. And so the replacement plans proposed weakening both of those to lower the prices of the plans. It also changed the structure of the subsidies to push more money to younger, healthier people and less money to older people who are more likely to have high health care costs. Again, all of the logic of this is to change that risk pool so that it's cheaper for insurance companies, so they lower all of the premiums. But because they cut back the subsidies overall, they didn't just change the structure, they reduced the amount of money, and they cut funding for the Medicaid program so significantly. All of the nonpartisan groups estimated that the policy change would lead to more than 20 million people losing health coverage through each of the plans proposed, and large spikes, like maybe tens of thousands of dollars a year in premiums for people who are over 55, over 60, who have to buy health insurance.
Would that put us back to where we were before, before ACA, or worse?
If they actually projected, it will make things even worse.
Amazing.
That it would have been a step backwards to implement one of those plans.
And what about the individual mandate? Is that still something that's mandatory right now?
The individual mandate is still in place. The Trump administration has done nothing to remove the individual mandate. All of the subsidies are still in place. Medicaid, if you live in a state that's expanded Medicaid, which in this region is D.C. and Maryland, all of those programs are still in place. I think that's my number one message over the last 6 months, is that the ACA is still the law. Open enrollment starts November 1st. It's coming up fast.
I know. It seemed like just yesterday I enrolled.
And so it's going to be very important this year to shop for coverage, because there's been so much uncertainty because of the new administration, what they're going to do, whether they were going to fund all of the programs. The insurance companies don't react well in an environment of uncertainty. And so they, in response to that uncertainty, they raised rates to account for it.
So whatever increases we saw last season, we're likely to see more increases this coming season.
Yes, we're expecting significant increases.
Like, what percentage are you guessing?
I believe that the rates in Maryland, the plans will be going up 20% to 50% for the premium costs.
Wow.
And so luckily, if you qualify for subsidies, because the subsidies go up with the premiums, that will cover most of those increases. You're not going to feel it. You're going to have to shop, though. You have to make sure that the plan that you chose is getting the right level of premiums. So it's something that you don't need to delay to the last minute. As soon as mid-October, early November comes around, start shopping at the plans, poking around which one you want, what the prices are going to be after your subsidies. Get all the paperwork done. Don't wait till December 15th, and talk to your loved ones and family and make sure that they know that these plans are available. There's going to be a lot of press about how the premiums have gone up, but there's still subsidies to help out, and there's still coverage available.
But you're going to find that the middle class, sole entrepreneurs, sole proprietors are going to get hard because they're not receiving health benefits from an employer.
Yeah, so the higher income people that don't get insurance through their employer and don't qualify for Medicare yet, they're the ones that really absorb all of that premium increase.
Yeah, that's amazing. So let's talk about, where do we go from here, Benjamin?
Yeah. So there are right now two sets of there's really three sets. There's still one more repeal and replace plan getting kicked around in mid-September.
And which one is that?
It's called Cassidy-Graham.
Tell us what that's about.
It seems very unlikely to happen. It would convert funding to a block grant and then let each state choose what to do with it. Some states would choose to completely eliminate the ACA program, some would continue them, and they'd be able to use that money for however they want it. It seems very unlikely that that will pass because there's just not enough time. It would have to happen by September 30th. So it's a very short time for a bill that the text was just released today on September 13th. So that's still technically on the table, though we're all thinking it's unlikely. The second pool of options that are being discussed are to stabilize the Affordable Care contract. So a lot of this is just committing clearly and unambiguously that the administration will implement in good faith the Affordable Care Act, that they will fund the cost-sharing reduction subsidies that make some of these plans affordable for low-income people, that they'll continue to fund outreach and navigation and education that we mentioned was so important to help people understand their plans. Then at the state level, there's continuing to adopt Medicaid expansion. If people want the ACA to work and bring down their uninsured rates, there's still a very, very generous match from the federal government for Medicaid expansion. And finally, some states are starting to look at reinsurance pools, which are ways to kind of back up insurance companies in case they get a lot of very sick people. And so if you give them, you promise them that if they end up with a very expensive group, then the government will back them up. And so that allows them to bring everyone's premiums down.
So let's talk about reforms that are being discussed to increase coverage and improve the ACA.
So this is the last big area, is these more aggressive reforms that are looking to increase coverage. So first, more and more states are looking at how to address the biggest gap of the group that remain uninsured, which is immigrants who don't qualify for the ACA benefits. So California, Illinois, New York, and D.C. have all made these commitments to using state dollars to make sure that they're getting closer and closer to universal coverage. So more states are looking at that just because it's better to have everyone covered in the pool together. The second is this is also going to be in the news a lot, is single payer Medicare for all. Some people are talking about Medicaid for all. So these are all just different ways that to simplify a system. And that's one of the appeals of it, is that it's a lot simpler. You don't have to understand 10 different systems. It's just working with one. And so there are going to be more proposals about that. It's very expensive, and it's a big, big change. If you have coverage through your employer, you would have to change over to government-sponsored coverage.
And single-payer is working in other areas, like other countries?
So single-payer can work in other countries. Other countries have a system similar to ours, similar to the one that was created under the Affordable Care Act. And again, if it works better than it does here. And so it's just because it's a new system for us. So there are a lot of different options for a way to go. Single-payer is not the only path forward, but it is one. And then the third option that people are looking at to increase coverage is making a public option. So that would allow Medicare or Medicaid to be sold to people to make sure that they're not paying too high of a price, and it really competes with the private insurers to bring down their prices. Some people are looking at only offering that to people who are older and more likely to be sick, and so then it makes coverage cheaper for everyone else.
So let's wrap it up and let our listeners know what they should do as far as preparing for the upcoming enrollment process.
So the first thing that you should do if you're worried about open enrollment is not worry about the policy yet. The policy is going to come. You should make sure that you get yourself healthy, you're covered, that you have a plan that matches what you and your family needs. The simplest thing to do is to start at healthcare.gov. It'll ask you what state you live in and direct you to the right website. So Virginia uses healthcare.gov to enroll. Maryland uses marylandhealthconnection.gov. And D.C. residents use dchealthlink.com. So all of those tools, they're going to have anonymous browsing, so you can shop plans without having to enter in all of your information, and they'll estimate how much you'll end up paying. So you should start looking at these over the next few weeks. Open enrollment is going to be in the news more as we get closer to November. And really, just I would urge people to, there's only a 6-week open enrollment period. It's just November 1st through December 15th.
So start early, right?
Start early. If you have coverage already, don't just renew it without thinking. Shop around. Double check. Make sure that it's something that fits what you want.
Okay, well, we're going to have you come back when open enrollment is underway, or maybe just beforehand, so that you can walk us through that process. You're willing to do that?
That sounds great, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing all that we need to know about the Affordable Care Act, where we stand, and where the program is likely to go in the future. Benjamin Turner.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for being here.
Thank you for listening to the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast. Remember, you have the power to use policy to improve your picture of health where you live, work, and worship. For more information on the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast, visit our website at www.hprc.info and like us on our social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr.
The research and information that we report during this show was supported by the National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities of the National Institutes of Health under award number 5U54MD008-60802. The content is solely the responsibility of the authors and does not necessarily represent the official views of the National Institutes of Health.